Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to the Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, I'm going to replay a show I did a few years ago with the National War Tax Resistant Coordinating Committee because this is the season of federal income taxes. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with the reason why some people have a moral opposition to paying for war.
Welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, everybody who is on this call. And we do have some special guests. We have Ed Hedeman and Ruth Dem. They're both from the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee, the NWTRCC. And they have been doing this for a long time. They have a lot of nuts and bolts answers for us because I think most of the people on this call are convinced that it's the right thing to do, but some people just don't know how to go about doing it. And this call won't be played until Sunday, but I think that it's very interesting or relevant that we're recording this on the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr., who did so much for so much civil disobedience in his lifetime. And so I just want to honor his work and his life today also on this call. And I just want to say I'm not going to talk too much because I think everybody knows that I'm a war tax resister. But I get emails all the time from people who are very concerned about what the government can do to me because I'm a war tax resister. I even had one guy say that if I would marry him, he would pay my taxes off. But that's not the point. I don't want anybody paying my taxes. And here in the United States, I think we're more concerned about what's going to happen to us. But the reason I don't pay my taxes is because I care more about what's happening to other people and what our government does to other people. So, Ed Hedeman, I'm going to call on you to give your story about why you are a war tax resister and what it's been like for you. And then at the end, after everybody's spoken, I think we can talk about, specific things that people can do to be war tax resisters. So, Ed Hedeman, I'm going to give the floor to you. You can give a brief introduction. Of yourself, and then go into this issue.
All right, very good. I started doing war tax resistance following a notice that I got from the government, a draft notice back during the Vietnam War. They wanted me to go into the Army and go over to Vietnam and kill some people, but right. I non-cooperated with that. And then I thought, well, it doesn't seem to be enough that I refuse to go myself and be in the military and yet pay taxes for somebody else to go. And so the next year, after a lot of thought, I non-cooperated with paying taxes for to the IRS, for the military. But in a sense, it seemed easier to refuse induction, even though the penalties were very, very heavy for that. But in that instance, I felt like I had no choice because it was so intrusive. I mean, go into the military. And taxes often are hidden from a lot of us, well, most of us, and so they seemed less intrusive and easier to ignore. So I was a little more nervous about that because it seemed like I was asking for trouble rather than being ordered to do that. But I decided that in the end, the results of joining the military and killing some Vietnamese was no different to the Vietnamese than my paying taxes to allow somebody else to kill them. And I decided that I just was not going to pay for that. And now it's not Vietnamese, of course. It's the Afghans, the Pakistanis, the Iraqis, and so forth. But I also had to decide, you know, how to go about it, because there are several ways that you can refuse to pay taxes. But one thing I decided, this is just for me, I mean, it differs for different people, but I didn't want to be anonymous. I didn't want, one of the things I wanted to do was be in the face of the government. Part of my war tax resistance was in a confrontational, nonviolent direct action approach. I wanted to encourage people to be outspoken, not to hide away, and maybe develop a crippling protest that the government couldn't ignore. I mean, that's one of the good things about war tax resistance, is that you're not ignored. I don't want to be ignored. I mean, for me, a protest is not as effective if the government ignores you or your opponent ignores you. So that was one of the major reasons why I wanted to do tax resistance. But it's also, I wanted to, of course, sever my connection with the military and keep as much money of my tax money away from the military as possible. But I saw it as also an opportunity to redirect my taxes. I mean, the government's priorities then and now are, I think, distorted, that they put more money into the military and into wars than what's really needed with human needs. But one thing that I could do as this form of direct action was to refuse to pay my taxes and take those taxes and give them away to organizations that were really helping people for, you know, human needs efforts. So that's, you know, my motivation for and why I started out doing it.
Well, then you've had some interesting interactions with the IRS, too. I think that you and Ruth and the organization and Peter, the attorney, have given me so much support and moral support, because this past year I've had to face the IRS and the U.S. attorneys, too. So what was that like? People don't want to do it because they're afraid. And so what was that like for you?
You mean starting out or when I went to court?
When you went to court.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is 1999. The IRS had been frustrated in collecting from him because they really haven't succeeded in collecting in the, well, now 40 years that I've been refusing to pay the IRS these taxes. As I say, I pay my taxes, but not to the IRS. I mean, I pay my Social Security, Medicare, state and local taxes, but the federal income tax, I take the entire amount and give it away to other organizations. But the IRS has been unable to find any significant assets to collect, so they took me to court and ordered me before a judge to reveal sources of my assets. Now, I wasn't pleased about that, because that meant my refusal could potentially mean contempt of court and some time in jail, a few months in jail probably. And so, that, you know, I wasn't thrilled about that prospect, but I was determined not to give that information over. But I also said that I didn't want to volunteer that information, because that might help incriminate me, basically a Fifth Amendment defense. And the judge, a Republican Bush appointee, accepted that, and then the IRS backed off. They could have granted me immunity from prosecution, and if I continued to refuse, then it would have been contempt of court. But the IRS did not do that. I mean, they could do that any time, but they didn't choose to do that. But it's, you know, it is a scary thing, but it doesn't have to be. A lot of people look at war tax resistance as all or nothing. They have to either they pay all their taxes or they pay none of their taxes. I think it can be just as effective in some ways if people at least refuse a token amount, say $10 or something like that. The penalties and the risks of that are almost minuscule, but the IRS would have congenitally has a hard time ignoring even small amounts. But from my point of view, if 1,000 people refuse $10 each, that would be a more powerful protest than one person refusing $10,000. The amount of money is the same, but a lot of little amounts bugging the IRS is going to be something that they're going to have to notice. And I think that's part of why I do it. It's not just to keep my money away from the military, but also to do a protest they can't ignore.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll be back to you when we do the question and answers, but I want to move on to one of my friends. She's actually a friend, and as a matter of fact, all three other ladies on this phone call are friends that I've met in person and done work with around the country, so it's very, amazing to me that I know such people, people who have been doing this and been doing this for quite a while. And I also want to talk, Ruth, you might want to be thinking about this question for when you speak. I want to know if the NWTRCC, if they have like a registration for people, if they know how many people refuse all or part paying all or part of their taxes every year, and how can we do this in a way that spurs a larger movement. So, Maria, I'm going to go to you so you can tell your story of why you became a war tax resister and what it's meant to you.
Thank you, Cindy, and it's great to hear your voice on the phone. And we had a really good time when Cindy was here a few years ago.
We did.
Anyway, yeah, we did. I became a war tax resister in 1998. It was after about 10 years of unlearning all the lies told to me by all the major institutions I'd encountered in my life. You know, the schools, my church, and then the government, the media. My first activism was around Central America solidarity work. Anyway, as I was learning the truth about the lies, it was making me very angry, you know, and from that anger came a lot of good activism. And the first area I was active in was in Central America Solidarity, and that was during the 80s and the 90s. I was fortunate enough to be able to travel to Central America, Cuba, and southern Mexico. And I saw firsthand what U.S. foreign policy wrought for the poor people of those countries. Mm-hmm. I was really touched so much by how hard the lives of women were in these countries. It was just a major thing in their day just to be able to find food for their families and their children, you know, and cooking outside and having to go to the bathroom outside and being in communities where babies didn't have diapers because they were so poor. I mean, it was just very horrible. And at that time, I realized how lucky I was to be, you know, a citizen of this Western Empire. But I also felt very uncomfortable with that. I was just really conflicted in that, why was I so lucky to be born in this country and have this comfortable life? And not only that, you know, my tax dollars were paying to help my government oppress and wage war on people. So I felt very strongly that I needed to do something. And what made things come to a head for me was, I believe it was 1998, when Madeleine Albright appeared on 60 Minutes, and she was asked if she thought the 500,000 deaths of Iraqi children was worth it for the sanctions. And I was appalled that the woman said yes. That just could not believe that. So that is when I decided that I really had to do something very radical to express my disgust. And also it was about coming out of my comfort zone and feeling like that I was doing something to maybe, you know, at least be in solidarity with these folks that my government was really, really torturing. Now, prior to 1998, I'd experimented with some more tax resisting. The first thing I did was telephone tax resistance.
Right.
And then, several years, I withheld like $100 from my money I owed them and wrote them a letter and told them why and told them that I really wish that they would stop doing what they were doing. And, of course, all I ever did was get back the letter, telling me that I owed him so much money, and not that $100 plus, you know, penalties and interest. Uh-huh. So I would go ahead and pay that, but I was really frustrated because it's like, I'm even giving them more money than I did before. So when I decided to go big with this, I decided to do W-4 resistance. Now, I had a job. I had money coming out of my paycheck. I had W-4s filed on me. But what I learned through the Vortex resistors, new track basically, that you can claim as many exemptions on your W-4 form as you want. It's, uh-huh. That's perfectly legal. So I, 1998, I upped my exemptions, and then I proceeded not to file my taxes. I know that's kind of doing it without having the public outcry, but that wasn't as important to me because I've been involved in so many solidarity actions and where we confronted the government as going to Cuba against the blockade. And that's great, but basically they don't really care. You know, I mean, we were just a little fly that they would give us, a hard time, and then, you know, we'd be on our way and whatever. So I decided the main thing for me was not paying them my money. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I would be so depressed about what was going on. But knowing that I was committing civil disobedience on a daily basis really helped me survive all these years, especially during the years of the Bush administration. Oh, my God. I mean, that was just hideous. And so many of my friends became ill during this time. I mean, that's how seriously we took all the horrible things that he did. So I'd say that Vortex resistance has kind of kept me going. Now I'm retired, and I'm on Social Security, and they finally tracked me down. Mm-hmm. My Social Security check. So they're deeming me 20% of my check each month. But they still don't have my exact address. So I'm just kind of debating whether what I'm going to do about this. I haven't decided for sure yet. I really want them to stop taking that money, but by doing this, I'm going to be revealing myself. And I'm just still... You know, I've got to be, I think I have to be very strategic about how I do that. And I've gotten letters from the IRS occasionally during all this time not filing, but I would like ignore them, and then I wouldn't hear anything from them for another couple of years. So somehow I've managed to stay off their radar, but I do have a feeling my day's coming, but I will face it, whatever that brings. And I have to say, I also admire Cindy for what you did in court, and your statement was wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Maria. I just want to say, too, is that I just had to myself come to the, I had to make friends with the fact that I might have to go to prison for my actions or pay some other kind of heavy price. But I always think that's not as bad as the price that the people in other countries have to pay for our foreign policy. And really, you know, our domestic policy isn't that great either, and a lot of people are suffering even worse than I'm suffering, you know, trying to live the way that I do. So, that's why we named this war resistance is courage. And Maria, I thank you for your courage. And I'm going to go on to Anita. Anita, thank you so much, Maria. Anita, if you want to say your last name, that's fine, but I'm not going to say it. So if you want to give an introduction.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be a good idea. But I'm sure that a lot of people that are listening probably already know me from being networked in with you, so... But we'll leave my last name off.
Okay. But go ahead and tell us your story.
Well, my story there's a lot of common threads with the first speaker and the second speaker. I can definitely echo some of the sentiments that they've already noted. So I'll just go ahead and begin at the beginning. I came from a military family, and living in Florida, There's never been a lot of job opportunities here. Very early on in my early 20s, I went into the military. And I went in during what was considered peacetime, but it really wasn't. It was under Reagan. And I went in for a job and education. Not because I wanted to be a part of the war machine, and not at that time, of course, not understanding that the military-industrial complex was behind everything. Whether you were in the military during peacetime or war, it didn't matter. So I spent 4.5 years in the military, and at the very end of my tour, my husband, who was also active duty, died under circumstances. And when I had gotten out of the service, I came back home to do some college, and always had issues in regards to securing work, and always wondered if there was some type of black flag against my name. I had no idea whether there was or wasn't. But even when I did live in Washington, D.C. for 8 years, I could not get a government job. I couldn't even get a job at the post office. So my 15-point veteran preference didn't do anything for me in securing employment. After a bunch of different circumstances, I ended up back in Florida. And, of course, during the whole elections in 2000, it was pretty apparent what was going to happen. Anybody who was in any way politically savvy knew that we were going to be at war very shortly. And then, of course, 9/11 happened. So it was pretty obvious with the election of Bush the son, and then 9/11, it was meant to be. And I very quickly got involved in the anti-war movement and was one of the first organizers of Veterans for Peace chapter where I live. And after that, always having a problem securing employment, there came a time, and it was, I think it was around 2005 or 2006, I just said, they've got me working like a maniac, working on a 1099 as an independent consultant so they don't have to give me benefits. And here I am supposed to claim the 1099 and give them money. And I started to think about the cost of war and everything. And in my mind, I'm going, why am I giving them money? And the other factor that came into play was the fact that I owned no property. Mm-hmm. I didn't own a home. I had a used car. There was virtually nothing anybody could really take from me, maybe a nice collection of books or something like that. But I said to myself, why am I giving them money? And they're going to use it for war. They're going to use it to just perpetuate everything that they're doing. And I just said, wait, back up, you know. And I was not willing to go to H&R Block and fill out the paperwork. I can't remember if this was 2005 or 2006, but right about there. And I have not done my taxes since. I just absolutely refuse. No one has contacted me as of yet. I'm kind of in a situation where I'm willing to do whatever it takes, whatever happens. I'm kind of, you know, just resigned to the fact that if they slap money on me, I don't even have a checking account, so there's like nothing they can really take from me. So that's where I'm at right now. I will not fill out the tax forms. I never even put in for, what is it, when you can file an extension? I never even did that either.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no intention, and I feel actually it's a very freeing and liberating experience. But there's some drawbacks, practical drawbacks to this. If you do this and at some point you become unemployed, you will not be able to become unemployed. So you won't be able to loan for anything if you cannot present your income tax paperwork from a 2 or 3 or 5 years. So these are all things that people have to look at before they make this commitment, that, you know, it could affect what you do in the future. If you have a really good job and all of a sudden, you know, you're unemployed, collecting, just collecting any of the social stuff, the food stamps, employment, compensation. So those are real issues for a lot of people right now, seeing as, you know, a lot of people are unemployed or underemployed or about to become unemployed. So that's really my story. It's not a complicated one. Just out of pure not having the money, not having the finances to go to H&R Block, and just being that conscious decision that, no, I'm not going to file my taxes this year, and I'm probably not going to file them next year either. I'm not going to give money to support the war effort. The other thing that drove me to this and that I've always looked at and I continually look at is that graph that Ben and Jerry did about the war expenditures. It's like a pie graph. So every now and then I pull that out and look at it and remind myself why I'm doing this. So that's really my story.
Well, also, I think you said something that's very relevant. I did own property. You know, I did have a job. I did have, like, everything that a regular American would have, but I had to make a conscious decision to divest myself of all of that stuff so I could do this. And but I think some people have been successful and they haven't had to do that. But I thought your employer paid your unemployment insurance. That's something that I would have to look at. Maybe Ruth or Ed have a different question for that.
Well, so maybe let me add something to that. When you're, like, for instance, I do a lot of home health care and I work through agencies. So when you, here in Florida, when you're doing that kind of work, a lot of the agencies will have you sign paperwork that states that you're an independent contractor. So therefore, they don't have to put anything in for employment for you.
No, that's right. That's correct if you're an independent contractor, I believe.
Yeah.
That's true in every state.
On your own, basically.
Yeah, in every state, I think that's also true.
Yeah.
So, Anita, thank you so much. And so then we'll move on to Katie. Katie, same thing, if you want to say your last name and a little bit about yourself and why you do this and what it's meant to you.
I'd be happy to. Cindy and everyone on the call, good evening. The bottom line of my tax resistance is that I believe wholeheartedly that this country needs another revolution based on tax, like the first one.
Uh-huh.
And unless, basically, you know, I'm not naive enough to say unless we all do it, because that will never happen, of course. But as someone said on the call already, you know, it's the import many people maybe not giving a little bit as opposed to one person not paying a lot, I think is incredibly important. And my justification or the way I just look at what I do is I call it basically a no degree of separation analysis, not unlike what Ed said at the start of the program, that I won't pay somebody else to go do what I couldn't do or wouldn't do.
Right.
I'm blessed, so blessed that I work with a group of young men and women in Afghanistan for some years now. And how do I know? Of course, we can't know. You know, is the money I pay going to pay for the drone that kills them on the hillside when they're tending their sheep and such? Is it going to be the bullet that goes through, you know, somebody's head? Is it going to be, you know, any, of course, the list goes on and on. Is it going to keep Bagram open another day or Guantanamo or what have you? I'm sure everyone on the call knows the long list. And I try to personalize it, or I do personalize it, and Cindy, when you were here last week, you know, we kind of mentioned offhandedly, but it's true, you know, what if Obama came to us today and said, you know what, we need another part for that drone. Would you mind writing me a check right now or giving me $100 in your pocket? You know, would we do that? And, you know, of course not. Of course we don't. But the American people, we are sheep, basically, as far as the issue of tax and tax resistance. And I finally came around, well, not that I needed convincing, but I took action on it. It's been 10 years. It was since 2003 in Iraq. And I am, as they say, all in, 100%. I'm not going to give them anything because I have absolutely no trust whatsoever in the government or the budget or where the money goes or doesn't go. I mean, I think it would be incredibly foolish and naive to think that we had any control over, you know, even a penny that we would give to the government, that it would go to, or more to the point, that it would not go where we don't want it to go.
Right.
I have not had to go to court yet. It's one of those things I don't want to say I wake up every day thinking about it, but I wake up many days thinking about it. And it's to me a necessity defense. You know, if the government says, you know, you've committed a crime, an Internal Revenue Service crime by doing or not doing what you're doing, you know, as we've pled in our First Amendment cases and trials for protesting and direct actions,
right.
You know, it is a necessity defense, and I would plead it. And I know every day that if I go to prison for it, then so be it. You know, if someone said to me now, you know, will you go to prison or will you kill your friend Abdullah in Kabul, who you work with, I know obviously I'd be off to prison and gladly, rather than do the horrendous things that this country does. And I think what Ed said in the beginning, I echo his sentiments on sort of like buying, you know, in the olden days when you could pay, you know, buy someone to go do your military service for you,
uh-huh.
and kill in your name. And as our dear friend Deborah Sweet says, you know, with World Can't Wait, you know, not in our name. Well, this is not in my name, and I will give them nothing.
Thank you, Katie, so much for that. That was very, very, very meaningful, a very wonderful testimony about why you don't do it. But you're one of those ones that might have a significant amount or a significant penalty for doing it. I don't know if
right.
you want to say anything about that or if you're just finished.
Well, I can say that it certainly is something I'm mindful of, and it would not be true that I don't have fear about it, because I given my definition of courage, and I noticed you put on your website, on your email, that war tax resistance is courage, and I believe that wholeheartedly, and hopefully not in an arrogant way, but my personal definition of courage is fear plus action. I'm not unafraid, but I will take the action. And I believe that it is a courageous thing that we do, anybody who does it. And no matter how much, what percentage, what dollar figure. And I'm not in a position where they have nothing to take from me. They can take, you know, a lot from me. They can take pretty much everything from me. If really push comes to shove and it comes down to that. So I know a lot of people I shouldn't say I know a lot. I know there are a lot of people who do it under the radar or who try to keep their expenses so low or their income so low. And I'm not in that category. So I say I risk a lot. You know, I don't even know what that means. If they take it, then they take it. You know, I won't die. Whatever they take, they can have. There's every cumulative amount of everything I have and own or ever will own still wouldn't make me, you know, risk the life of one of my kids I work with in Afghanistan. They can have it.
Yes, very, very true. Very amazing. I feel the same way. And I keep telling them, you already killed my son. I mean, what else do you want from me? And, you know, then just thinking of all the other people who have been killed throughout the ages, I should never have been paying my taxes. And I'm glad I finally woke up to the fact that I was funded my own son's murder. I funded so many things that I don't approve of. I don't approve of almost anything this government does. Why should I have to pay for it? They took $282 from me this year, and I'm really mad about that. That they have the nerve to get into my bank account and take out $282. It just offends me, and every cent that goes to them, I'm very outraged over.
Absolutely, and I think what Ed said is so important. Where, you know, he takes his tax dollars and just gives them elsewhere. And I think I mentioned it when we were together last week that I try to make up for it by doing as much pro bono work as I can, to contributions to organizations that do work that I do approve of.
Yeah.
So I basically pay them in kind. And my kids in Afghanistan do a duvet project where, you know, they're keeping the country we're occupying, where the refugee babies in the refugee camps are dying, they're freezing to death. And my kids are making duvets for them so they can survive the winter. You know, I'll give my money to them. And it's a choice where our money goes, and I agreed with Ed wholeheartedly on that. We do something. We give something back, but we can direct it.
Absolutely. And so thank you so much, Katie. And Ruth Dan, the National Director of the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee, I'll bring you on now and give you a chance to maybe talk about what the other people have said and what people on the call can do.
Mm-hmm. There's a good representation there of, the issues that got people started in war tax resistance. And I think in our network where you have people who are in their 80s or 90s to young people in their 20s or younger who are starting to figure out how to resist, they're all different kinds of issues related to war that get people started in war tax resistance. And people do it in lots of different ways. So the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee is a coalition of groups around the country who either promote war tax resistance or support war tax resistance, and includes some national organizations like War Resisters League and Nonviolence International, Mennonite Central Committee, Fellowship of Reconciliation, Christian Peacemaker Team, a variety of those groups. And then there's still some local war tax resistance groups and regional ones. We have on the National War Tax Resistance website, there's a list of the contacts and individuals who are contacts around the country. So, there are people to reach out to also to try to get help in deciding what to do. I think, like a lot of people, I started pretty small. It's been a long time ago now, in the 80s, when I was active on anti-nuclear work in particular. But I did start with phone tax resistance, which is the federal excise tax on phone calls, which at that time included long distance. Now it's only if you have a local landline, there's still a federal excise tax on it. But it was kind of a way to dip your toe. It still is a way to dip your toe into war tax resistance. Or if you owe money at the end of the year, to refuse a small amount and kind of get started that way. I think Ed has a chart that he calls something like the addiction of war tax resistance. And once you get started, you start thinking about all the other money that's going to the IRS, so or to the federal government. So you can kind of move up the ladder, and you can change the way you do it over time. I think we've heard that from some people on this call. And some people find after X number of years, for whatever reason, they might have to bail for a while. They have a kid. They get married. Something happens that changes their life. But until things change in this country, you can always come back to war tax resistance. So the network is, we're pretty small. I'm a part-time consultant, and that's the only paid position for this organization. So it's pretty small, but a lot of volunteers do a lot of the work and a lot of the outreach and producing literature and materials. And you find a lot of links on our website to other things. And a lot of the focus, of course, is at this time of year, because tax season starts now and ends basically on April 15th. Although if you're somebody who files an extension, there's even more months to think about tax season. So we do need to think about being active all year round. And, you know, people who take a new job and they face that W-4, are you going to take one or two allowances or whatever, you know, the minimum is, or are you going to add a few maybe? And so that you owe something at the end of the year and can decide to refuse. So it is kind of a everyday sort of resistance and an all-year-long set of choices to make. And I think anybody who picks up the news, reads the news every day, finds another reason why they don't want to pay taxes in relation to military and the violence that is going on in this country and the people who need the services. There also are, I just wanted to mention, there are some other things going on. We do focus on Tax Day, and National War Tax Resistance puts out, we post on the web actions around the country on Tax Day that are about war tax resistance, but also about military spending and, people who are out complaining about what the taxes are doing. So we collect a list, and people should watch our website for that. There's also something that started the last few years called the Global Day of Action on Military Spending. And that's the website for that is demilitarize.org. And that also, the day is April 15th. It has coincided with U.S. Tax Day the last couple years. And the International Peace Bureau and Institute for Policy Studies are the two organizations behind that. But NUTRIC is the acronym that I use for National War Tax Resistance. We've become a partner with that and been more active with it. And there is a group called, Conscience and Peace Tax International, CPTI.WS, which is based in Belgium, and has a lot of information about groups internationally who work on this issue. So it isn't just in the U.S. There are a lot of countries where military spending is a lot lower, but there are people who still don't want to pay that 12% or support whatever their country is doing militarily. So we're not alone. One of the questions that came up is how many of us are there? That is fairly unanswerable, actually, at least at this point. I don't know. We've tried different ways. We have a website, wartaxboycott.org, and that's mostly a web effort to collect names of people who publicly are resisting. And we have maybe 300 people signed up on that, but I know a lot of longtime resistors who are not signed up on it. So I know that that's a very low number of the people who are choosing not to pay taxes because of war. We often say between 2,000 and 8,000. That's kind of a big range. But there's so many people who lower their income, who do it different ways, who don't want to be public, that I feel very open to ideas about, you know, how can we become a more visible effort by unifying our campaign. People might remember that Code Pink sponsored a campaign called Don't Buy Bush's War a few years ago, which was trying to get, 100,000 people to sign on and then people would refuse. We'll refuse once there are 100,000 signers or whatever the number was, I forget. And I don't know if they ended up with a few thousand. It was a pretty interesting website, actually. I think it's still up because people put up comments. And it was certainly a good visible effort, bigger than anything that, you know, our network has been able to do. But it's very difficult to get people to publicly sign on, I guess, for whatever reason. And the IRS, I think the dead might remember decades ago, they actually used to quote a number, but they stopped doing that. I think, you know, they don't want to say to the public, oh, yes, there actually are people who have very conscientious reasons for refusing to pay taxes. So they just lump all, you know, tax protesters together.
What have people called me? Something very derogatory, you know, like I'm doing this because I love money or something like that. So, yeah. You know, they can say very derogatory things, mm-hmm. You know, when you're actually risking a lot for your principles, you know. It's not like I want to have more money to go to Las Vegas, you okay. know, or something like that. So.
Yeah.
A deadbeat. I think I get called a deadbeat a lot.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, the IRS and the government have been very good over the years, of course, of building up that fear. You know, everybody jokes about the voluntary tax system. You know, you hear people saying that a lot and feeling like it's a joke because they're certainly, especially at this time of year, the government ramps up all that stuff about, you know, you must be a good citizen and pay your taxes. And they put out some stories about, you know, somebody, some tax cheat, you know, that they're going to punish. And so that happens a lot now to get people ready for tax day and ready to pay. But, yeah.
Well,
you know.
I see a commercial on, I think it's an H&R Block commercial. Of course, they're having more commercials this year. And it's like this agent saying, oh, this lady came to me and she forgot to file for 4 years. You know, and so she had all this paperwork and I had to file for her. And I think like Katie and Maria and Anita and you all know is that this isn't something that, oh my gosh, I just forgot to file. This is something we think about all the time. It's something that is at our forefront of our lives and how we live our lives. It's not like, oh geez, I just forgot my taxes. It's something that is a very conscious decision that we have to make all the time.
Right. Yes.
Well, are you ready to take some questions?
Yeah, sure. I didn't want to say more because I thought we might.
Okay, I have Ed and Ruth unmuted for this part. The one question that we got the most of that we can address, I think, very easily is that people who already work, they say, how can they be a war tax resister if they get taxes directly taken from their paychecks? And I think that it's already been answered, but if you want to address that specifically, one of you guys.
Go ahead. Ruth?
Well, when you take a new job, your employer hands you the W-4 and says, here, fill this out, and people feel a lot of pressure at that point. You can always ask for a day or so to think about it, but it's where you put down your allowances that tells your, you know, the payroll department how much to take out of your check. And for people who are single or whatever, they usually put one allowance. You should put two. I like to say to people, you want to kind of figure out at least how to get the withholding in balance so that you're not actually getting a huge refund at the end of the year, because that means you've given this free, no-interest loan to the government for all that year that you've been working. So that's one way, at least, to not give a loan to the government, is to try to get in balance and not get that big refund. People look at it and they say, oh, this is, you know, I'm getting money back. No, you've just given this loan. So you want to look at that. We actually have a booklet called How to Control Withholding, and a flyer that's on our website about this. And it's, you know, it's easy to follow a formula or to mess with it a little. And actually, there are quite a few calculators on the web about withholding also that people can use to try to figure it out. And you can also ask your employer anytime during the year, whatever, tell them that you want to change, say, your W-4, and you can take it back and change it. Our publications also talk about the risks and the penalties for, you know, taking allowances that the government doesn't think you should take. And mostly what happens in the end is that if the government figures it out, they will tell your employer to change it back to one. But there actually are some penalties on the book for that, so people should investigate it a little bit.
Also, when you turn in your W-4 form, it's only the lower third, the lower portion, not the worksheet part above it. A lot of people don't even pay attention to that, but the employer only needs to know the number of allowances, aside from name and address and Social Security number, not how you came up with that number of allowances. So people shouldn't turn in the whole worksheet, just the bottom part of their W-4 form. Also, that W-4 form goes to the employer. It rarely ever gets to the IRS unless the IRS requests it. But it's what the employer sees, not the government.
Okay, thank you. Can you talk a little bit about, is there a penalty for having a frivolous reason not to file?
Ruth, you want
what
to
the IRS considers a frivolous reason?
A frivolous penalty, frivolous filing penalty, is just one of the most frustrating things for us. It started in the 80s because people writing messages on their tax form, you know, I won't pay for this or that or the other thing, or basically the government just got annoyed with people who were refusing to pay for one reason or another, so they created the frivolous penalty. So $500 was what it was until a few years ago, and they raised it to $5,000. And the IRS has a whole website page on this. IRS.gov is actually fairly interesting. I use it a lot. And they do have a lot of information about their frivolous, what's frivolous. They have about 45 categories of frivolous, one of which is has to do with conscientious reasons about war or religious reasons for not paying taxes are frivolous. So if you file, we encourage people to not write on the tax form. If you're going to file it, just file it normally and enclose a letter. There's nothing frivolous about that. But they are inconsistent about this penalty, so we've had some problems with it. And some people in our network have definitely been charged the $5,000 and are fighting it, and we're working on it. It's hard to say anything brief about this, but we also have a page on our website about it in the Frequently Asked Questions page, so have people look there. But the main problem is that the IRS is inconsistent, so it's a difficult thing to deal with to some extent. And, Ed, do you want to clarify what I'm saying?
No, well, I think that's right. And the key thing is that if you're going to file, as Ruth says, don't write on the form. You don't mind getting the penalty. Some people are uncollectible, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But the key thing is the IRS is looking for people who claim that they don't owe taxes because of whatever reason. And we are not claiming that we don't owe taxes so much as we refuse to pay them. That's a significant distinction.
So that's a very good point. And a lot of one thing that's encouraging about this issue is that we've had a wide range of people with different political views join us in this. It's from libertarian to green to socialist revolutionaries are joining in on this, but. There's some people who believe that taxes are illegal, that it's against the Constitution or something like that. And when I first started communicating with you guys and communicating with Peter, the attorney, they said that the IRS goes more after those people than war tax resisters.
Yes, that's true.
That's true, and partly because there have been a couple methods that have been promoted by some of the anti-tax groups that have actually caused the government to lose a lot of money. They've had techniques for filing for refunds and other things that have really, you know, taken maybe millions out of the government coffers. And, I would like to say that war tax resistors are withholding huge amounts also, and in a lot of ways we are, because a lot of people live below taxable income, don't want to have a job that does take money away or live off the books and whatever. But there were some of these techniques that really made the government crazy, so they cracked down harder on certain of the constitutional-type groups than maybe they have on us. I mean, I think, you know, I would like to see this be a huge movement. I know that means that makes the government more angry, and that makes the risk higher, but that is the point. So, yeah.
Well, my agent, my personal revenue agent, told my attorney, well, she wouldn't be so vocal about it. Well, that's the point. That's the point. So I just have one other thing that I want to address. We're almost out of time. But somebody brought up this point. Is it effective to do war tax resisting if the government is going to raid Social Security? I'm not even sure that's true. For money to pay for war, or if the government just borrows money for war?
With the government, war always comes first. War in the military comes first. And
right.
I mean, it's like North Korea, military first. It's the same thing here. So no matter what we do and how we change our priorities, they're going to go for the military first. That doesn't mean that we should give up and stop protesting. I mean, the key thing for me is not just withholding money from them, but also being a visible protest. I mean, the government, as I think you mentioned earlier, can seize anything. They can put me in jail. But they're not going to stop my resistance. I'm not going to refuse to resist, even if they seize everything, stick me in jail. They're not going to force me to cooperate. And I think war tax resistance is a fabulous form of protest that is not available in a lot of other countries, because it's much more difficult elsewhere than here. And I think it's a real opportunity for us to do a protest that the government can't ignore, even if they collect the money plus interest. That doesn't mean we've failed. It's like you do a civil disobedience and you get arrested, doesn't mean you failed, but you got arrested. Well, if we do war tax resistance, they collect the money, doesn't mean we failed, but we've made a protest they couldn't ignore.
Perfect. Is there anything else that you guys would like to add? I'm sure there's people who would have personal questions pertinent to them, but the best thing for them to do would be to contact you through the website, or do you have an email you'd like to get? To give out to the listeners and to the people who will be listening on the show?
Oh, sure. We have a 800 phone number. It's 800-69-7464. And then on the website, there is, under, I think, Who We Are, the Who We Are button, a contacts and counselors page. So it does show the groups and contacts around the country, and there's usually at least an email, if not a phone number, there. And the email for the national office is the initials of the organization, same as the website, nwtrcc@nwtrcc.org. And if you search on war tax resistance, our website and some others will come up, so you'll find some contacts.
And there's definitely more safety and comfort in numbers, and So I hope that we can reach out and do more education and make the government crazy.
Good.
And make the government stop their wars. That's the goal for it. So Ed Hedeman, Ruth Ann, Maria, Katie and Anita, thank you so much for sharing your stories and your time. And everybody, thank you for listening to the call. So let's just all be in touch with each other, and let's keep the discussion going and let it get to the war machine. So thank you, everybody.
Thank
you. All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this replay of the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee call, a community call-in. Hopefully next week we'll be back with part two of the David Talbot interview. Remember, David's the author of The Devil's Chessboard, and we had scheduling difficulties and conflicts this past week, so hopefully we'll be back next week with part two of the really interesting and informative interview of David Talbot. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank you war tax resistors out there, and I am one of them, for your very committed and principled opposition to paying for war. And I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to The Soapbox. Peace out for now.